I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe, and this is our family Christmas get-together. All right? It is Christmas Eve here in Chasing Justice land. And while I could go on and on and on about all the wonderful things I love about Christmas, I could talk to you all night long because I love my Chasing Justice family, I've decided to bring someone that I love very much back onto the microphone to join us today. We have Jim Giordano here with us from The Neighborhood. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. It's Christmas. I love this holiday.
It's fantastic. Now, when we look at our country, there's a lot going on. So, yes, it even though it's Christmas Eve, we are going to mix Christmas Eve and politics. But we are going to, you know, we're going to try and end the show on a Christmas special. This is a Chasing Justice Christmas special. And we're going to try and get Miss Kathy in here, my wife, and Marisa, Jim's wife. And we're going to talk about some traditions and what goes on at Christmas. Because you know what? It's that day. It is here. The hour is approaching. The moment of the arrival of the Christ child is coming. Our families are all starting to gather together. You're out there listening to me here and listening to Jim, and we're talking about things. The tree is lit up, and it's a beautiful time. And we're going to talk all about that and bring it together. But that doesn't mean there isn't a lot of nonsense going on out there in the world that we need to talk about. So, Jim, I think, you know, you and I have spoken personally, and we're watching this, but this entire impeachment thing, we're finding out now what Bob Barr is doing and the investigation, how that's increasing. And everybody knows that I talk about it every week. I was very skeptical about what he is going to be doing, him and Mr., I guess it's Barham from Connecticut. Durham. You're right. I was skeptical. I figured, you know, a bunch of swamp creatures, they're going to find some way to bury it, like the IG did. I think when he comes up and goes, I can find no evidence of bias, when the rest of us see the bias all over what happened. It's interesting. I understand what's difference between the IG report and the AG is that the AG can go criminal, and he can empower his people. Obviously, Mr. Durham can empower a grand jury and then go after people criminally. The IG, the Inspector General, can only deal with the people that he's dealing. So he can only say, Jim, you're part of the FBI. Were you biased in what you said there? And when you say no, that's all he can go by. He didn't find bias because he can only talk to those people, which I think is lost on a lot of people. We don't really understand how come all of us see that bias. And he wrote a report that basically said there's only two reasons all of this happened. All of this fake FISA stuff, everything. There's only two reasons it happened. Either one, complete incompetence, or number two, it was intentional. Now, I think for me, and I think for you, Jim, and for a lot of people who are intelligent, we say, okay, if it's incompetence, that just means they really shouldn't have been in those positions to begin with. But if it means it was done intentionally, now we got to peel that back and say, well, what does intentionally mean? Why would you do something intentionally wrong? What do you think that means, intentionally?
Well, initially, and the news media spun it, the IG report said the initial investigation, opening of that investigation, was warranted. Well, that's because there was evidence presented that could have been concerning to the American people. And yes, but there was no backstory yet presented to the FBI at the time. And I'm thinking, I think it was the FISA court. So to open the investigation may have been warranted. That's all he said. There was no bias at that moment. But as you peeled the onion down, there was bias when you looked at all the other evidence and they should have shut it off.
Right. When you look at the exculpatory things, the things that didn't lead to where they were going. And Jim, this all comes back to what you and I and Jack and Bill Dallas, we have said since day one when this happened. Nobody expected Trump to win. They thought they could have got away with this crap and it would have been buried and nobody ever would have saw it. So they just did what they did, thinking they were going to get away with it, and they didn't. On election night at 9 o'clock, when the world turned around, uh-oh, they were exposed. So as an investigator, I look at that and I say, we go out and we do it. We hear lots of rumors, okay? We hear Nancy Pelosi is actually a member of MS-13. Somebody tells me that. Nancy Pelosi is a member of MS-13. She has personally involved herself in homicides of MS-13. Now I say, as the investigator, really? That doesn't seem plausible. I mean, she's the Speaker of the House. Is she a member of MS-13? I don't know. Let me look into it a little bit. So I start to look into it and I realize that's not only implausible, it's absurd. That's the end of it. Unless I have everybody lined up to keep coming out with more nonsense because we want to get Nancy Pelosi. So we make up our evidence. Suddenly, there's Jim, not Jim Giordano, just a guy named Jim who comes forward and blows a whistle and says, I work for Nancy Pelosi and she is MS-13 and she makes us all do the rituals in the basement of the Congress and it's horrible. Oh my gosh. Now we're going to have an investigation based on that. Absolutely. That's where all of this is nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense. So when we look at this and we see the things that Bob Barr has said recently, that he's going after not just the FBI because his purview and the purview of the Department of Justice is criminal. They can look into criminal things. And his guy Durham is now looking at what happened in the CIA. How were they involved? These guys traveled all around the world. They went to Italy. They went to England. And now, because Trump is president, it's different. They have to kind of cooperate with what happened over there. So we may find out the extent of this conspiracy, and we've said it all along, Jim, you and I have said it, this is a coup d'etat.
This is bigger than the FBI.
Much bigger.
It's totally political. I found it very interesting, and it didn't get much news. When Giuliani came back from Ukraine, his accusations, he has affidavits, he has testimony about how money, American taxpayer money, was laundered. I'm not saying he's right. I don't know. I suspect he's right because of what I see. But it was laundered through Latvia, and it was basically brought back. This is our taxpayer money brought back, potentially right back into the Democratic Party. The operatives here. Now, that needs to be investigated because if it's true, let me tell you something, Joe. This is bigger than anything this nation has faced since its beginning. It is tantamount to treason, and it's tantamount to our we're turning into a banana republic.
It is. And one of the things, I saw somebody the other day that I know, one of my social media people, they popped on and they said something about this is a different moment in America. And I have said this on Chasing Justice, is that it's crystal clear to me that this is a watershed moment for our country. Our forefathers, these unique individuals who showed up in a particular place and time in history and created this country that never existed before, this freedom, this liberty that we enjoy today, They gave their lives, their fortunes, their very honor, everything they posed. At this point, we have now depleted all of that they have done, and we're in a different place now. What we have seen with this impeachment, all right, the most recent impeachment vote by the Democratic Congress, is a danger not just to Donald Trump or to the Republicans, but to you too, my friends on the left, my liberal friends, where you're jumping up and down, you're having a party because you got Donald Trump. You do not realize what has happened to our country when they can take the because they have the majority, and all of them voted to impeach, but two of them went to the Republican side and said, no, you have a bipartisan action here. It's bipartisan against this impeachment. This was such a political motive. This makes this a banana republic. This changes who we are as a people. And that's what happened this week. Yes. And we just don't realize it. because this is not real. If, and I've said it, we've said it, you've said it, John, Jim, in our private conversations. If Trump did anything treasonous, if he did anything, if he really conspired with Putin to hurt our country, we'd be the first ones to stand up and say, he's got to go and impeach him, get him out of there. He didn't do any of that. They have no evidence whatsoever. They have opinions of college professors. And that's what they're basing impeaching a president of the United States on? This is a moment that will glare in history. We may not recover from this. Maybe not in our lifetime.
Let me tell you something. No, I don't think we'll ever recover from it. I find it very interesting how, and very concerning to me, how, for example, in Virginia, this all these counties are now becoming pro-Second Amendment counties. There's one county that actually has established a militia. And I'm like, this is dangerous. This is very dangerous. It's not that I disagree with them, but I don't want to go there. Are we facing a civil war? Is that what's going to happen?
We have talked about this and said it's been the cold civil war. But you're right. In Virginia, one of the central southern states, not far from Fort Sumter, where that first shot was fired in our history. Because you know what?
Where the revolution started.
Where the revolution, where the Civil War started.
Yes,
yeah. And you look at that and you say, and your question is great. Are we at that point? We've been dancing around the topic. Me and you and lots of different people have been saying, is this really happening to America? We can't imagine it because we've been so stable. I thought Mitch McConnell, which Rush Limbaugh, who we love, Uncle Rish, Rush, he calls him the turtle because of his neck or whatever. And I've not been a fan of his. I found him to be very weak. He was very strong in his public sentiments. When he came out and he said, this is so totally inappropriate that this changes our government. This changes how we do business. Because every other Congress up till this point, has resisted using that power that they have, and the Congress does have that power to impeach, to use it inappropriately because they differ politically with the guy who or the girl who's the president. And isn't it funny, though, Jim? Here's my perspective. We now have the Democratic Party, who is so filled with socialists that have actually come out and said they're socialists. Vote for me, I'm a socialist. We got Bernie Sanders, who's a vowed socialist, running for president of the United States. The very first time they have any power whatsoever, they do something so completely and totally antithetical to America and our Constitution that they impeach a president over nothing. What do you think they'll do if they're in power to you?
If they can impeach Trump over this, I mean, he put out his conversation. If they can impeach, any president. So what's it going to be? Every time there's a president that's elected. Listen, you and I did not like Barack Obama for his policies. Did we ever think that the nation or the Republicans should have drummed up some kind of charge to impeach him? Absolutely not. That's what I would, he was duly elected president.
He won. He got to deal with it. Yeah. Elections have consequences. We dealt with his nonsense.
Look,
we disagreed. But now,
the abuse of the IRS. And this is what we saw many, many years ago. The abuse of the IRS that was very, very offensive. And remember the Tea Party?
Because you can't fight the IRS. They come after you, you're done.
The EPA. Basically, he weaponized government.
Yes.
And this government has been so weaponized, it's now in the FBI, which seems very apparent to me, the CIA, and that's scary. That is so scary. To the point where they're actually doctoring evidence and making it up to destroy a duly elected president of the United States. And why was Donald Trump elected? Because he's a nice guy? Because everybody loves his personality? We know that he's very crash.
He's gruff. He's not presidential.
He's a fighter, and it's not very presidential. But you want to know something? He is not part of the global elite.
Right.
That is their problem. He is fighting it for you, and he's fighting it for me. And I totally believe that, and that is why I support the man, and I will support the man until he's elected out of office.
Right. Now, very interesting that when we look at that, and we've talked about that here, you know, I always, even as a young person, I remember I started hearing people say, you know, Donald Trump is the, when he was a businessman, you know, he's doing his Art of the Deal book and he's all over the place and he's buying buildings and whatever. Donald Trump is this, he's that. And I said, we should all aspire to be Donald Trump. This is a guy that he's doing things. He's making the world different. I want to be like Donald Trump. I don't mean crass and say horrible things because he has said some stupid things. Nothing that men don't say, admittedly, inappropriately. He says things, he tweets things that are inappropriate because he's just a regular guy. He happens to be the president. But you're right, he is fighting for all of us. And that is what these people don't like. That is really, even the Never Trumpers, because, and I think the Biden thing is really causing a problem because everybody in Washington's family, both sides of the aisle, they're all on the payrolls. They're all getting tons of money. How does somebody come making $170,000 a year? And I've said this and I hate repeating myself. $170,000 a year for 10 years, that's $1.7 million. They leave Congress and they get $52 million. Where'd that come from? Do you end up at your job for 10 years and end up with 150,000 times more than what your paycheck was? How does that happen?
That's $1.7 million, but you have expenses. You have to carry right. a place. Let me tell you something. There's no way you're going to make that amount of money.
Right.
The system has been corrupted, and I think this is what they're protecting. And I'm talking about the global elite, the deep state, whatever you want to call it. And there's a lot of Republicans in that same boat. I don't know which ones, but it seems to me that it's pervasive. Every single time you go down to Washington, and next thing you know it, you get two elections, you walk out, and you're a multi-millionaire.
Right.
There's something wrong with that.
There is. And look at this, Jim. You and I have great ideas. You and I are really decent people. We would go to Washington. If we got elected, we would go there. We would do the right thing. We would try because we're not part of the game. We're not part of the game. We would think, oh, this is realistic. We're going to go there and make a difference. Which is, as much as AOC, the AOC girl, as much as she's like kind of wacky, she really believes she's making a difference. She really believes the whole game. She's going to be corrupted like the rest of them. Right now, I think she really thinks she's doing something other than dragging her party into communism, which I just don't think she understands the reality of. But I'm thinking, you and I, if we went there, we would go there with the idea of, we're going to do the right thing. And then eventually somebody goes, hey, shut your mouth and you get $3 million in your family bank account. You vote for this. That is a difficult thing for people to... And then they stay there for 45 years.
And you wonder because, you know, everybody gets tired of their moment and, you know, I don't deserve this. And next thing you know, you know something? I'm not totally against it. You take the money and now you're emboldened to whatever that cause is. That's not right for the American people. Now, you and I would always ask that question. Is this right for the American people? Mm-hmm. Is this why I'm here? Because that's integrity. But how many of our politicians get into the game because they want to help America? Let me tell you some, very few. I see some of them. Jim Jordan. That guy in Texas.
Nunes. Oh, my God. Devin Nunes.
It was right from the very beginning.
President Nunes, President Pfizer, Jordan.
About that Pfizer court.
Right.
He was right from the very beginning, and they castigated him. Of course, the media castigated him, which brings me to our biggest threat. And Trump calls it the fake news. Let me tell you something. The news media is controlled by six entities. Those entities are part of the globalist elite deep state. In my opinion, the evidence is very clear that they have been trying to control the American people, what we think, and they've been very effective.
Jim?
Very effective.
I think you're right, and you know what? This is Christmas Eve, and the conversation goes on. We'll be back in a minute here on Chasing Justice. Ho, 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 everyone.
It's your news and entertainment network. news blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the people, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and it's Christmas Eve here in Chasing Justice Land, here on America Out Loud, right? America Out Loud, Jim, you know, you've been doing this show with me and being part of the show for well over a year now. We've got tons of episodes, which you can find on the podcast, Apple, iHeartRadio. We're all over the place. Has anyone ever said to you, you can't talk about this, you shouldn't say that, make sure you give this message? Anybody ever said that to you?
Never.
That's the beauty of America Out Loud, and that's the gift that Malcolm Out Loud has given to all of us here, is that he says, hey, you have something to say, go say it. Go say it bold and go say it loud. And that's what we're doing here, America Out Loud. So
it has occurred to me, Joe, that because I'm very honest on the show, but I'm afraid of this government. If we continue down this road, because I'm very vocal in my belief of what America was and what it should be, that may not be popular with the element that seems to be trying to take control of this country, will they ever take that against me? Will they ever try to throw me into some kind of a camp? Because, and it sounds ridiculous, but you hear what's happening. Is it possible? Well, let me know when I think about it.
Jim,
should I be just keeping my mouth shut?
I think that's what we all, and that's how they intimidate us. Listen, we just said in the last segment, we know that Donald Trump says some wacky stuff. We know that he says some things that are outrageous. We know some things that are, he could say things that are hurtful. But the reality is, what is our choice? Vote for socialists and people who are going to destroy our country? Or a guy that says some inappropriate things? No, you have to take care of your country. But do you put a Trump sign in front of your house? Do you put a Trump sign on your car? Why don't you do that?
No, I'm afraid to do that.
Somebody will bust your windows. They'll cut your tires. Now, if somebody puts Warren 2020 or Biden 2020, are you going to go bust their windows and cut their tires?
I may like look at them and give them the Jimmy the Chin as I pass by. It's like, what are you, nuts?
Now, I got to explain that. The Jimmy the Chin. My friend Jim here, he will drive around in traffic, and when he gets annoyed with people, which happens a lot, he will throw the chin out. He's like, you, hey you, what are you doing? We call that giving him the chin. So, but the point is that people on our side, we disagree with them vehemently. Not just that their policies are wrong. These people are trying to destroy our country, destroy our traditions, and take it away. And we see a sign on their house, we don't go up and bust their windows, throw paint on their house, beat them in the street because they wear a Biden hat. But if you wear a MAGA hat...
Oh my God, I mean, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for trouble. I mean, and it's so clear, the evidence of the last few years of what's happened. The Covington kid.
Mm-hmm.
Are you kidding me? I mean, all he did everything right. You and I would not have sat there and watched this guy with the drums who was part of, I think he was part of the Black Hebrew Israelites.
No, he was his own group, but the Black Hebrew Israelites were having their own protest, and this guy was then banging his drums, went up to that kid to try and intimidate that kid, and the kid says, I'm just going to stand here and smile at him. And the media turned that all around, that this kid was intimidating this old Vietnam veteran, American Indian.
Back to the corruption of the media. It is consistent. When the IG report came out, it was 800 pages full of very damning information. What does the media come out with? They were cleared.
There was no bias.
And I'm sitting there listening to, in New York, this WABC, which is relatively conservative when it comes to the people they have on the radio. And I'm like, are you kidding me? There's so much more to that report. And this is what you're presenting out to the public. And most people don't have the time, like you and I do, or they care enough to delve into the real specifics. All they do is listen to that.
Soundbites.
That soundbite.
Soundbite.
And they're like, oh my God, they were cleared.
Well, I think it's very clear when we see the media, and the media hates being questioned. They hate being called fake news. But we see over and over and over again examples where they edit their stories to have a point of view that turns out that they're wrong. They went after this Covington kid. They called him a monster and a horrible person that he was doing this. And they went after him like they should destroy this kid. But Greta, anybody that says anything about Greta, you are the horrible person. But how about the whole media attacking this young boy who was just standing there when these people attacked him? They are so hypocritical. There's example after example after example.
That's such a good point.
Of what these people do in the media. Just tell the story. But they don't. They are invested in one side of the situation. And that is dangerous. Where the press is there. So that we, the people, can get real information. There was a rally yesterday, and here's what happened. Not, let me tell you what it really meant when Jim Giordano stood up against the British government and was gunned down. Absurd.
It's absurd, yeah. I mean, it's not only the media, it's the colleges. I mean, they just came out recently. This 500 historians came out for impeachment. Now, to the many people in America, they can say, whoa, educated people, they're historians. They're against Donald Trump. He should be impeached. First thought I had was, they're communists. They come from colleges. They have been inculcated into the communist ideology, which is tyranny. So they don't care. They just have a label that they're historians.
Right.
They don't care one iota.
Maybe they're wrong historians. Maybe their history is wrong.
I don't know. I mean, but I don't understand anybody who's a historian who knows the history, the true history of the world, how they can be against this country. And they certainly are.
Well, it's funny because you can look at any situation, and depending on how you tell the story, you can tell it from different points of view. When you pick a side and tell your story and you give it the credibility of you, the reporter, you, the network, what's built into that, what's baked into that pie is that we investigated this. And when we looked at both sides, we realized this is the truth. But that's not it. They go in with a bias and they go, this kid, he's wearing a MAGA hat. He's a horrible racist. Let's go after this kid. Not what happened, what really happened. That is why Trump calls them the fake news. I wish they weren't the fake news. I wish they could tell us the truth and we could go, I could count on that. But the American people do not trust the news at all because we see example after example after example of where they lied. Just like that FBI agent that went in for those FISA warrants and he changed one word. What do I say all the time? Words mean things. Carter Page is an asset of the CIA. He is not an asset of the CIA.
What a big difference.
That changed.
Because that means he's a Russian spy.
Exactly. And that's what they wanted to portray him
exactly.
as.
Exactly.
And they never thought they would get caught because Hillary would have been president. All of this would have been buried. No one would have ever looked at this stuff. Unfortunately, a simple thing like one letter in our English alphabet is not a asset of the CIA. The guy was working for the CIA. They twisted and turned everything to get those warrants to go after him.
Twisted and turned. They lied.
They lied.
And that, to me, is not only criminal, it could be treasonous.
Yes.
But let's talk about the good. I see the truth coming out. I see the American people slowly becoming aware of what's really happening. Whether it's the news media, whether it's what's happening in Washington with the Democratic, I don't know, it's a charade, it's a sham. And they see the government for what it is, they see the media for what it is, not all the American people, it's a slow process, but the needle is moving in the right direction. And we're here, I think there's a lot to be happy about. It's Christmas time. I'm looking at the tree right now. The tree means to me it's family. All those great connotations as we grew up you know, coming down the stairs looking for the presence. And you know something? Yes, there's the religious component, but that's the baseline. There's all the other good stuff that comes around.
Yes.
The whole Christmas holiday, which every religion, every race, every creed should be able to appreciate that goodness. It's all about happiness, family, being free, all the American values. That's what Christmas is about.
It is. It's the essence of that. And it doesn't matter whether you celebrate Hanukkah, which is another beautiful celebration, whether you celebrate Kwanzaa, because it makes people feel good. It gives them something to be positive about. That's why I say celebrate it all. If you're having a Kwanzaa celebration with special food and everyone's having a great time, invite Lieutenant Joe. I will come and Kwanzaa the hell out of it. Because you know what? If that makes everyone feel good, if that means something to you, tell me what it means. Let me be a part of it.
If it's about family, if it's about celebrating the beautiful things of life,
yes,
which we find in the Christian tradition, in Christianity, it comes from Jesus Christ, our God. But you want to know something? Everybody, I don't care who you are, Christmas to me is all about love. It's all about family. It's all about all the good.
You're absolutely right. And you know what? In our last segment today, because it is Christmas Eve, we're going to invite our wives in, who are really the essence of love in our families. They are the centers of our family. We have traditional families where, you know, the mom and the wife is the most important thing to all of us, to our children, to you and me. It's why what we do. You can yell at us for that, but that's the reality. We're going to bring the ladies in because they are the essence of the center of family. Just like that tree is the center of Christmas, and that's all about Jesus. Well, Jesus is about family and love. We're going to get to that. We have only a couple minutes left here in this particular episode, and we want to kind of finish up with our thoughts here. So when we see this impeachment, now they're impeaching this president because they said he did a quid pro quo. Now, how many people use that term before quid pro quo, quid pro quo, quid pro quo? It means you're giving something to get something. And they're going crazy with him. Didn't Nancy Pelosi say she is not going to send the letters of impeachment over unless she gets what she wants out of the Senate? Isn't that a quid pro quo?
It certainly is. Didn't Joe Biden actually go out on tape and actually hold $1 billion in order to protect his son from being investigated? Is that a quid pro quo? It's right on tape.
Right.
Now, no one says a word about it.
I got something to say about that right there. So Joe Biden holds $1 billion with the approval of Barack Obama, because this is what he said. If you don't believe me, call Barack. Call Barack on the phone. He'll tell you. I have authorization to say this.
He's culpable as well. Sure.
Why would you want a prosecutor in someone else's criminal justice system removed? What does the vice president of the United States of America give two flying leaps about a prosecutor in a foreign country? That's like coming here and saying, hey, that Dallas prosecutor over there in Dallas, if you don't get rid of him, Trump, we're not doing... Why did Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and the American government care so much about a prosecutor in Ukraine that they would hold $1 billion over their head? Now, you could say there's only one of two reasons. One, that prosecutor had such a significant position in that country that American foreign policy and American safety and security was being damaged by his presence. Or he was investigating Joe Biden's son, and Joe Biden felt empowered by being the vice president for 8 years with a president that was never questioned by the press, did whatever hell he wanted to do, and I'm telling you, get rid of that guy.
It's more than Hunter Biden. What's been coming out, and I don't know this for a fact, but I did listen to what Giuliani's brought back, and it hasn't gotten any media attention as of yet. Let me tell you something. They were laundering $7 billion of our money. And where was that money going? Some say it was going back to the Democratic Party. We know how the game is working. That is such corruption of the top, and we're talking to the very top, what happens to America if this comes out? And I think it's going to come out. What happens? What do we do? Do people like you and me say, you know something? I don't trust it anymore. I don't trust the judicial system. I don't trust the police, because the police are part of that judicial system. Where do we go? The country is going to fall.
We've lost
apart.
Control of all the things we had trust in, because it's been so corrupted that you can't trust the media. You can't trust the government. They are all in it for themselves. It really is horrible. And I hate to say that here on Christmas Eve, but this is where the solution is right in front of us.
What is that?
The solution is right in front of us. We, the people of the United States of America, we have to, and this is where I talk to my friends on the left, and I know you're listening, and I know you're having feeling giddy that you got Donald Trump because you hate him so much. I'm asking you to look beyond your own little moment that you got this guy that you hate so much and think about what's happening to your country. I have said this 20 times before, and I'll say it again. If they did this to Barack Obama, I would have been jumping up and down in my seat saying this is not right that they're doing this, because you know what? I didn't care for any policies that he had, but he was my president. And if there was a coup d'etat like this going on behind the scenes, attacking my president, my government, my way of life, I would have been incensed and I would have stood up and defended him, even though I don't like a thing he did as president. My friends on the left, I'm telling you, this is a moment you need to be a patriot. Not because it's Donald Trump. He'll be gone in 4.5 years after he wins re-election. Because I'm sorry, he's going to win re-election. After he wins re-election, he'll be gone and you'll have the swamp back to yourself. But in the meantime, they're going to take your country away from you. They're going to take your freedom away from you. They're going to take your children's future away from you if you let this happen. This is not right, what happened to our country. Doesn't matter who was in that White House. Look at the fraud that's just gone on with this impeachment. You know it's not right. You know that it was fake. If there was something, I'd be on your side saying, run this guy out of town on a rail. He did nothing. They're making it up.
But it's not just fraud. They're covering something more sinister, more terrible up. That's what it's about. The fraud is bad enough, but the cover-up is going to it's going to come out. And when it does, everybody needs to sit back and remember all the good things about what America is, because it's going to be very disconcerting.
Jim, you're right. And this is what I'm saying, is that I think we've used all the fuel our forefathers given us. It is now fallen to our laps. I never expected that it would be our turn to change the course of this country. But everyone out there, this is our moment. We are the new forefathers. Are you going to pledge your life, your liberty, your fortune, and your very honor to do the right thing? Or are we going to let this amazing thing that is America disappear into the dustbin of history? That is your choice. That is what we're up against. Think about it.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Chasing Justice here on beautiful Christmas Eve. Now, I know normally when you do a show, you don't like to talk about the specific day, but here Lieutenant Joe is running this show, and I am saying it's Christmas Eve here on Chasing Justice Land, and we're done with the politics. We're done with the nonsense. Now we're going to talk about the beauty of this holiday. So to do that, we've pushed Jim off to the side where he'll be nice and quiet, and we brought in two of our most wonderful guests we've ever had here, my wife Kathleen and Jim's wife Marisa. And we're here to talk about Christmas, traditions. What are you doing right now? I mean, at this point in the day, Christmas Eve is starting to develop. You got family and friends coming over. The tree's lit up. The sun's going down across the country, wherever you are now, almost at 4 o'clock. It's going to be a beautiful Christmas Eve. The Christ child is imminent, and that's the whole idea of the holiday. So, Kathleen, welcome aboard. Glad to have you here, my love.
Glad to be here.
And Marisa, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
You girls are awesome. Now, Jim and I were saying before in our last segment, because we started talking about Christmas and we realized that we have traditional families. And you ladies, as the moms and our wives, are really the center of our families. You are the be-all and do-all of everything. You keep us all together. You help our children to grow. You help to guide us in what we do. And it's really a beautiful thing. So when we're talking about Christmas and the traditions of Christmas, what is it, Kathy, something that you want to pass on to your kids? What's important to pass on to your children about Christmas? What do you, if you could say, here's what I'm going to say about Christmas, and your kids would take that away to their families, what would you say?
Well, we're fighting a secular country or culture, and I don't want my kids to focus on just Santa and things and gifts. I want them to have more of a family atmosphere. I want them to realize the religious aspect of it. So when I see the younger generation getting ready for the holidays, it's all about the things. It's all about what they're getting, what they have to give. And I kind of feel like the Grinch in this, you know, like there has to be more to Christmas than this.
Right, like that poster on the back of the car. Keep Christ in Christmas.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that really what Christmas is all about?
It's very hard to do, though.
It is. What about you, Marisa? What would you want your kids to take away from your Christmas? What do you want to tell them?
Well, my kids, I would love my children to remember why we do the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Traditional Italians do it because fish was readily available. They were poor back in the day, and fishing was easy.
Or available.
Easier. Yeah. More available, yeah. And, you know, there's no glory until Jesus Christ is born. And he's not born until midnight, according to tradition. And that's when you have meat. And meat is like
a celebration.
Because it was so dear. You couldn't afford that. So I want my children to understand why we have these traditions that we keep. You know, no meat until midnight. No, you know, there's reasoning behind the tradition.
And I think that's beautiful thought. And the idea of a tradition, though, what does a tradition, that could be Donald Trump calling in. He wants to wish us Merry Christmas because the president often calls in here to Chasing Justice. He doesn't always get on the air. But now, Marisa, what is the value of a tradition, though? I mean, we all have kids. What's the value of a tradition?
The value is passing one beautiful memory or one beautiful occurrence that you treasure to try to have your children cherish the same feelings.
Right. Now, what do you do today that you got from your parents?
Well, I try. Well, we've given up a lot because, sadly, we live now further away from the core of the family. We used to live, you know, grandma lived up the block. Aunt lived up the block. You know, now aunt lives half an hour away. Grandma lives an hour away. You know, it's very sad that we don't have that nucleus that we used to have. Mm-hmm. And I would love to try to have that again, that togetherness.
You're right, and that's beautiful. And when I think back, you know, back in the day in my family, you know, as a kid growing up, Christmas was always magical. It was a magical time. And, you know, this year, and I think for many of us, I've talked to so many people this year who've said, it's gone so fast. we can't believe it's almost over. And it really has gone fast for me because Christmas is always magical. I put a tree on my deck. Every year, my daughter and I put a tree on the deck and we light it up and it glows the entire season. My whole yard is pitch black except for this little glowing Christmas tree. My neighbors have said to me, we love the little tree in the yard because it's pitch black out there. But that's a beautiful thing to me. And when I look at these traditions, Jimmy, you were saying before when we were kids, I remember we had a two-story house, a cape, and my brother and I would sneak down the stairs at 3 o'clock in the morning. We'd look, there was no presents there yet. Oh, we go back up to the room, you gotta go to sleep. And we come down at 4 and there's nothing. Mm-mm. And you come down at 5 and there's all presents, right? And you say to yourself, what the hell were our parents doing at 3 o'clock in the morning if there was no presents there yet? You know, I know my kids, the minute they went to bed, I put them out because we wanted to go to bed. But it's interesting because you think about that sneaking down the stairs, that magic, that something was to happen. And we did go to church for Christmas, and my parents did try to connect that for us, that this is not about the presents, it's about Jesus coming, and that's why you're getting presents. So I think that was part of the beauty of it, Kathy.
I remember, Joe, that my mother told me a story that they would get up in the morning and they could not even look at the tree and the gifts. The tree went up on Christmas Eve. Their parents did it when they were in bed. They woke up in the morning. They had to go to church first because that was the priority. Church was first. Then you came home and did the presents. Now, obviously, we're not doing that anymore. But I look at my... We just had a granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Born.
Sweet Annalisa.
Yeah. But how do you portray to your children there's a real meaning here, what you can do? You know, so we have a great Christmas Eve party. We have a lot of people come, enjoy that. We try to celebrate family.
Yes. And family, when you look at it, and Jim and I were talking about this before, there's things that are representative of Christ at Christmas. And family is really the biggest representation of Christ. It is the family. It is what he was to all of us. And getting that to our kids, I think, is really so important that they would understand that excitement and that energy. Jim, what was a tradition you had in the Giordano family?
I thought that what you said was very interesting because in the past, Christmas centered around Christ and traditions followed. Unfortunately, because society, as Kathy indicated, has become very secular, now what we have to do is we use the traditions to bring the children back to Christ and all the good things associated with that. Family, love one another.
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice. All that. But as far as what your question is, my wife is making me make cookies. My mother had a tradition with these cookies. I used to love the cookies.
Great Nana. Or as Steffi said,
started with Great Nana. Great Nana, the Oracle. And this year, my daughter's coming down. She lives up in New York City. And I am going to have to bake. I don't even know how to operate an oven. So I'm going to work
it. It's true. He doesn't. He has people for that.
Yeah.
But he's very, very good with a gin bottle.
I could put the oven on, though, for him.
Yes.
That's true. The gin bottle I can work on.
But you're going to bake.
What kind of...
Nana's Anisette cookies.
Are you going to feel connected to Nana by doing that with your daughter?
I love passing down the tradition. It gives me time to be with my daughter. And I'll make her do everything. I'll just sit there and watch.
Yeah, now, you know, because she's going to listen to that. But okay.
I think that's beautiful. And, you know, I remember how many times as a police officer I would work day shift or 3 to 11. And Kathleen, and this is why we say that the moms were the center of the home, and they absolutely are. I'd come home, and here's my wife with her apron on, whether it was my sons, my daughters, all of these. You know, I got 77 children because Lieutenant Joe is an amazing guy.
True.
We got 4. I'd come home, and here they are making cookies. And it's this wild abandon of flour flowing and people laughing and Christmas music. And they're making these cookies that once you're watching them make them, you would say, I'm never going to eat that cookie after what I just saw happen there. But It was such a beautiful Christmas tradition that these kids would put them in the oven, and next thing you know, they got stacks and stacks of these cookies that I didn't help with. I worked all day, but I loved watching it. And we took, and there's pictures we have of all my kids when they were little with these aprons, and she, Kathleen, we get these goofy hats for them, like they're French Tams, and they're making these things. But that tradition is so important. What are your traditions out there in Chasing Justice Land? You know, one of the things we started a couple years ago at, like, Thanksgiving, or when we would have a birthday for any one of us, for me, for my mother-in-law, my father-in-law, the kids, we would sit around and say, what is the best thing that you love about Bobby? And everyone would have something to say. The birthday person. So I'm asking you at Christmas, if you're looking for something to do tonight at Christmas Eve, you know, you're trying to figure out what to do. Everyone's having a cocktail and a thing, and Grandpa's sitting in the corner falling asleep, and you got, you know, cousin what's-his-name over there because he's pumping out the RV, whatever you're doing. If everyone sits around saying, what is your best memory of Christmas? That's how you can keep a tradition alive, by telling those stories. We are a verbal people. We pass stories down from one person to another through the stories. Let's not worry so much about the things. Let's tell those stories. So, Jim, what's a great memory you have as a kid of Christmas?
Actually, sitting in at dinner with, and every Christmas was a little bit different, with relatives, and just having the laughs, just having, sometimes we would play Risk, you know? I mean, it's just being with my brothers, being with my, and now it's my nephews and my nieces, and sometimes it gets even expanded to friends. Everybody having a great time and appreciating what we have in this country.
Was anybody on the cell phone back then?
No.
No, we actually looked at each other. Marisa, you grew up in Brooklyn. Now, if you were to tell me people were beating the hell out of each other on Christmas Eve, I would say, okay, that's Brooklyn. And I'd say, what was a Brooklyn Christmas? What was it like in the neighborhood in Brooklyn? Because a lot of people listen and are not from Brooklyn, and this is a wonderful part of our country. It is the
actually,
essence.
You're right, Joe. It was very quiet. It was
quiet.
Yeah, because people were very, very appreciative of that the Lord was coming.
They were reverent.
I lived reverent, and I lived in a community that was Italian, Irish, German, what have you. Other mixes too, but primarily. And Christmas was a holy day. Like, everybody was on the same page. And it was very quiet when you walked to Mass. It was very quiet walking back. It was very celebratory when you bumped into somebody on the road walking. But it was always solemn, though, for me. I remember a lot of quiet. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm. Imagine in Brooklyn, though.
Yeah, I know, because
quiet,
it was weird.
Did it seem different than every other day?
Yeah, because Brooklyn is such a noisy place normally. So the quiet was like peaceful.
That's beautiful. Kathy, now what about you? You're from Bayonne, but you came down here as a kid to the Jersey Shore. What's a Christmas memory for you?
I think that as a kid, I can remember very, very limited, because we moved from the city to, we called them the sticks, right? Mm-mm. And so it was very quiet, and we didn't have a lot going on, and it was quite not in a fun way. It wasn't like in a reverent way where the whole town was quiet. It was quiet because you were alone. And I remembered just trying to find the excitement of Christmas. I remember my father worked shift work, and they would have to wake us up in the middle of the night to say, oh, Santa came, because he had to go to work. Mm-hmm. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night, and I remember playing with all my games in the pitch black until 6 a.m. But it was just that how much my parents did for us to have that Christmas experience. I remembered mm-hmm. how much they had to do. We didn't have a lot of money, but they made that Christmas day a day
so
of
special.
So special, because mm-hmm. you didn't want to be trapped in your misery. You wanted to have a day of something special.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, I remember, I look back and I see my father, who we realize he's gone 43 years, did I say now?
Yeah.
43 years, a young man when he passed. But when I was a kid and my brother and I would be upstairs, and of course we go to bed on Christmas Eve, and you're waiting for them presents because you know the next day is, and we'd want to come down. And my father knew after a couple of years, we were down there, like you're saying, in the middle of the night, crack of dawn, you're awake, we go right, and it, no, too early. I remember my father saying to me and my brother, calling us over to the stairs, and he goes, now listen, it's Christmas Eve, you got to go to sleep, otherwise Santa's not going to come. But you can't come down until the sun comes up.
Yeah.
Now, we all know, like here on the East Coast, the sun comes up at 7 a.m. At Christmas time, you know, with daylight savings gone and all that. But I'm looking at that as a parent now. That was my father going, I was up all night putting the bicycle together with the handlebars that don't fit and the bolts. And you got to do this. And, Nick, you know, mom's running around. You got to do that. And my father's like, I got to get a couple hours sleep. You boys cannot get up until the sun comes up. Now, we were wide awake at 5 o'clock. And we would sneak down those stairs. And we would look and look. And then all of a sudden, at 5 o'clock, there was presents there. So... absolutely amazing.
What I'm hearing from you is the same thing I felt, is my appreciation for my parents and what they did to make our holiday special.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I'm doing all the time, every year, is trying to make that same kind of specialness with my children.
Yes.
But did you realize it back then? And I have to laugh because mine, I had the same experience. We would wake up before, and my mother was from that Mad Men generation. You know, martinis, cigarettes, and they'd party the night before, but they'd have to put the Christmas presents together. And I remember walking up to the stairs, my mother would walk out of her room and say, Christmas has not started yet. I go back to bed, and we're just sitting there at the base of the stairs. 5 minutes later, she knew that it was inevitable. She just, you know, got together and we all walked downstairs, and it's just magical. I mean, all the presents, the fighting, and I had a twin brother, and we'd always compare the presents. It's like, oh, yours is red, mine is blue. Well, why do I get the red one? You know,
and you were twins, right? Exactly. So that was even harder for them. Did anybody get a BB gun? Did you shoot your eye out? Did anybody out there shoot their eye out? I mean, I guess it happens, but it never happened to me. Well, you know, we're coming to an end here, and it is Christmas Eve here in Chasing Justice Land, and I want to thank everybody for being with us all throughout the year. And as we close off, I want you to all remember how much everybody here cares about you and how much we love the holidays. We love people being together. Go enjoy your family, your friends, everybody. God bless us. Everyone here on Chasing Justice, and all you out there, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Have a great day.